The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire. We're coming to you in a slightly different format today as we're just off the back of our ATS London conference. We're all in a bit of a haze this morning, but we're going to try and bring you through some of the highlights of the event, which was, I think, for all of us, one of the best we've ever run, actually. Really glad to be joined by COO Lindsay Rowntree and ExchangeWire CEO Rachel Smith. Both of you, good morning.
Hello.
Morning.
Is it? Yeah. It's still morning, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Not sure about how good, but it's still morning. Oh, God. As I mentioned, we had an amazing couple of days. It was exhilarating, exhausting in equal measure, but we had a great time, some wonderful speakers, some great moments, and yeah, I think we'll just use this podcast to go through our highlights. Lindsay, what was... what really stood out for you from ATS London?
I mean, why would you do this to me? What? Oh, okay. Where do I start? I mean, I agree with you. I thought it was one of the best we've ever run. The turnout was great. It was really good to kind of get the support of the audience we had some really good speakers this year, some really good brands, publishers and agents on stage as well. And I think the representation from the industry was excellent on stage. For me, one of the highlights was, you know, we listened to feedback from people last year and from people that said, this is what I want out of an agenda and this is what I want out of an event. And I like to think that we did a good job in answering those calls and those kind of requests from people to say, I want to see more publishers on stage. I want to see more case studies. I really want to come away feeling like I've learned something and not just have loads of navel gazing. And I really feel like across every single discussion that delivered, we had some great case studies. We had some great examples from people about how things have worked and how to make things better, how to improve things, like being really honest and open about the challenges they faced. And that for me, I think was a really, really important takeaway. And so many people have come to me more than ever before and said, I learned so much. I made so many notes. And that makes me really happy because that's exactly what we were trying to do.
Yeah. How did you feel about that, Rachel?
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like, you know, as ever, we put an awful lot of effort into curating the content and recruiting speakers and trying to create, you know, a knock it out the park agenda. But I think the thing that was different about this year was, as Lindsay said, we really weaved in pretty much as much as possible some fantastic nuggets of feedback that we got from everybody at the back end of last year and the beginning of this year, both in terms of what they specifically wanted to see at ATS London and in terms of things that they felt would be facing them in the year ahead. And so we worked really hard to try to reflect that through the agenda, and I think it definitely showed. I was really impressed with the degree to which you touched on it there, Lindsay. People were willing to share really honest pieces of insight, points of feedback. You know, if we row back, say, 6-7 years, it used to be quite difficult to get people to be super honest about what was going 100%. On in their businesses. Yeah, and I really feel like that's changed now. And I don't know, I mean, you know, like also if we row back 6-7 years, there used to be some quite controversial conversations on stage because there was a lot of tussling going on, particularly on the tech side of the industry. And I guess there was probably some tussling amongst, you know, agencies and tech vendors, brands and agencies. You know, I'm thinking of the early days of issues like in-housing. There was sort of, you know, this sort of atmosphere of how is all of this going to land? Is it really going to significantly change the business models of various corners of the industry? But now the industry is that much more mature. I just feel people are willing to be super honest with their peers about what they're facing. And I think that makes a massive difference to event content, and hopefully people in the audience felt like that too.
I totally agree with that. It feels like we're at a you know, a bit of an inflection point for many, many reasons, which actually I think were reflected very well on stage yesterday. I'm sure we'll go into what those things are, but it does feel like there's a lot more openness, a lot more collaboration. People are willing to share, you know, not trade secrets, but business models more, and say this is how this has worked for us, which you would not have got 5 years ago. And it's really nice that people are feel able and comfortable with being that open.
And maybe it's also too that we've just, you know, we've sort of put that out there as a requirement for whom we want to have speaking in these discussions, right? We're looking for people that have got a really interesting mix of experience, some also experience of the practicalities of doing some of this work that we're talking about, but then also, you know, some sense of seniority. So they've seen a few things across the industry and they're willing to impart their wisdom to others in the audience. The other thing I'd say is we really pushed our event partners this time around to mix up the sort of type of content that they brought to the stage. And I think that showed as well. So as you mentioned, Lindsay, case studies, but also just a different format of presenting, trying to hit different notes, trying to draw something really, meaty out of the discussion. And I feel like, a lot of our event partners really, you know, met that challenge and did a good job. You know, of course, we wait to see what feedback's going to be like from all of the attendees and have a look at the numbers across the board. Like you, Lindsay, I felt like we really listened on the publisher front. We had some great publisher-focused content. It was fab to have Rob Beeler joining us, taking the stage and giving us his perspective on how publisher business models are unfolding. He's super well-connected and very well-respected in the industry. And I felt like there was lots of publishers in the room. Conversely, I did hear some people through on other channels saying that they didn't see that many publishers in the room. So it's always interesting, isn't it? Everybody has a slightly different event experience, and it'll be great to look at the numbers when we get round to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was. There was a really good feel about the place this year. I felt it was the networking area was always buzzing. There were a lot of conversations going on, and like you say, the onstage content was it stepped up a gear for me. Like we saw a bit of a sea change from last year in terms of how open people were, as you've both mentioned, and it went to a very interesting, a very informative event. I think a lot of people from across the industry had a lot to take away from it. Which were your favourite panels? Any nuggets of wisdom that you took away, Lindsay, from any of the speakers that that really stood out to you?
I mean, I really enjoyed the panels I moderated. I thought I had some great speakers on my panels. I think certainly the opening panel of day one, which I moderated, which was about innovative data management strategies in a privacy-first world, I thought that there were some really interesting nuggets. We had Joe Holdaway from The Independent. We had Camilla Chull from The Telegraph. We had Lauren Ogundeko from Initiative. And we had Kerry Dawes from Digitas. And first and foremost, they all came to the conversation with different backgrounds. So Kerry's role was very much kind of working with clients in almost like a change management approach, kind of going to them and saying, what tech have you got? This is how you need to make sure that you are auditing everything you've got. And like, you know, do you have things that are overlapping? Do you have things that this tool does this, this tool does this? Can they work together more? And working with clients to help them understand what they've got. Because it's so often these things are bought by businesses, by one team, and then never used by another team. And trying to kind of get every department to see how they can work together. And it did highlight that there's a lot more there needs to be a lot more collaboration within brand marketers, but there is a lot more collaboration with the brand marketers within the teams. There used to be massive silo issues, and that is changing. I think, you know, from Lauren's perspective, talking about how they're working with Initiative, for her a big thing we talked about at the end of that panel was when it comes to anything data related, brand advertisers are far more savvy than they used to be, and they do not want to have the wool pulled over their eyes. This isn't programmatic 10 years ago where you'd say the word programmatic and nobody would know what it meant, but they didn't want to admit it. Now they will say, I don't know what you're saying to me. Can you break this down for me, please? And so her call to the industry was, can we stop using jargon? It's driving us mad because our clients are coming to us and saying, this needs to be simplified. And we agree. So please, tech suppliers, come to us with something that is simple and easy to understand that we can then break down for our clients, and then we don't all look like idiots that are trying to hoodwink them. And I think that's a really, really important shout out. And what I thought was really interesting from the publisher side, from Joe and Camilla, Joe certainly was saying that we now have to, again, it calls out to kind of like removing the jargon from the industry. In our contracts, we now have to say specifically yes or no. Are you scraping data from our site, content from our site? Are you keeping data that we aren't aware of? Are you keeping data from the bid stream? And all of these different things, because so many things go into contracts that we aren't reading properly, or so many things just aren't mentioned. And then we discover that this is happening by vendors we're working with, and that's not okay. We shouldn't have to call this out, but now that we are, there's some fascinating things coming to light. And that's something that as publishers, we need to make sure that we have control over this. And I think the control aspect came out a lot as well, you know, certainly from the publisher perspective, in terms of one thing that Camilla and Karen as well, from in a later panel, Karen Eccles from The Telegraph too, highlighted, which was very interesting. And, you know, you remove ad units from
a page and advertisers get better results, and then we get better revenue. It's completely counterintuitive, but you cannot load and fill a web page with loads of ads and think that that's going to boost yield. Now, publishers obviously want yield and they understand that, but actually, can you work better to build audiences, work better with brands? Are you able to do direct direct sold? Are you able to have direct relationships with your clients rather than going via SSPs and going via the programmatic supply chain to really be able to take control of your audience, how the clients are working with your audiences, and deliver your readers, the humans, and that was a big thing that came up a lot as well, the humans at the end of the end of the page that you're the ad you're serving, deliver them a really nice experience.
And you know what's interesting there, Lindsay, is that there was a couple of themes within that that I felt sort of ran through both of the days. The first was, you know, Joe Holdaway on that opening panel on day one also said that with respect to the contractual requirements that they need to undertake with any partnership that they have with a technology vendor, the specific questions that they've got to put to them, that it's raised the awareness, she hopes anyway, amongst technology vendors as to how they're approaching data management strategies, because rather shockingly, she said some vendors would return responses to those questions. Do you collect data here? Do you collect data there? Do you collect data in the bid stream? And then, and they'd say yes. And then they'd be asked what for? And they actually, there was one particular supplier that said, because you never know. I mean, if that, you know, exactly. if we haven't as an industry got to grips with the idea that we're not supposed to be collecting more data than we need, that we that there's a person on the end of this data collection cycle, that we, you know, and then that's somebody's personal individual data, and that consumers are so much more plugged into this than they ever were before, then when are we going to get the message? And it was really enlightening having her talk about that, you know, in an opening panel discussion. And within her role, you know, at The Independent. It's not like she works in ad ops, you know. No. She's a pretty senior person within this organisation, and she was just giving that as an example of stuff that they're still dealing with on a fairly regular basis. And my point that I'm trying to make here is that I feel as though there's been a lot of, you know, maturation in the industry over the last sort of 6-7 years, but we're still doing really basic things not very well. And that felt like a bit of a theme of the event. You know, I feel like we are much further on the pathway to improving things than we ever have been before. And there was a couple of really solid themes that came out of that, and data management and use of data and humanising it and remembering that it's a person at the other end of that was one of those themes.
Yeah, that was echoed in the panel that I moderated as well on how to take control of first-party data. Olya Paramanova from Sigma's, her first point was that the challenge that we really face with data issues is still trust, and that trust of the audience that as an industry we have lost over the years. It's, you know, it's gone and it's now has to be rebuilt from scratch. And I agree with you, Rachel. It was nice to have that honesty on stage about that and how we're going about that and what we are still doing wrong. Because in, you know, conferences for years, it's been fuzz about what we're doing well and what the next innovations are. And this time it's an industry sort of coming to terms with itself a little bit and the impact it's had and how to rectify it for both, you know, for the people we're serving, the audience, the consumer, and also the companies that make up the industry. I think it was fascinating. Lindsay?
I think that one of the panels that I moderated, which was about putting the human into advertising, and that was, you know, we had a big chat across many panels about talking about humans, and actually these people aren't consumers, they're not users, they're not a piece of data, they're a human at the end of something, and we need to remember that there's a lot of talk about a human first approach, a people first approach. But the panel that I moderated around putting the human into advertising, before I moderated it, I met up with my panelists and had a little chat, and had Anne Balabi, who is from Kinesso, Chief Client Officer at Kinesso. She said, I've not been to ADS before, and I've been looking at a few sessions. I'm really encouraged to see there's a lot more talk about the human, really encouraged to see that. But, and I'm a data scientist, so I'm a data first person, I think data, but everyone's still talking about humans as a set of data points. So actually, are we really talking about humans, or are we talking about data and just making sure we label it as humans? Are we really thinking about the human, or we still think about the data behind them? And that's so complex, and we are so complex. Is that the right way to go about this? And Corina Savin from AstraZeneca, who obviously AstraZeneca, they're a pharma company. So they're kind of like a B2B2C approach because a lot of their advertising is done to GPs directly, but it's for the end user it's for the end patient. She high-fived Hanan and was like, yes, thank you. I used to work in CPG, now I'm working here and I find the same thing. We have to have a human first approach because we're a pharma company and we're talking about real people with real potentially life-changing conditions. And that doesn't happen in advertising. And you, all this talk around humans, it's not really moving the needle. There's still a lot more to be done, basically. And I thought that was really interesting because I'm going, oh yeah, human this, human this. She's like, yeah, but it's all just still data points.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, I could be in the same, if you were to put these key data points together, I could match in the same target audience as Prince Charles, but I don't think either of us have remotely the same lives. And it's like, you do make a very good point there.
Never know.
Well, that's very true, yeah.
Like the publisher vendor says, you never know. You want that extra data just because you never know. But I think, though, that what also threads some of these things together, because I was moderating the panel on environmental sustainability and also another panel on media responsibility, both fantastic lineup of panelists for those that the team had procured for me. They were a pleasure to moderate. But I was really pleased to see that both of those topics were brought up as part of the conversation in a lot of other discussions, and I think the common thread here is that there is some sort of moral and ethical principle that's underlying all of this. I think this is a moment in time when the industry is becoming much more self-reflective rather than constantly looking outwards to see where the next opportunities are and realising that there is an intrinsic connection with lots of these things, actual real people, data ethics, moral ethics associated with environmental sustainability, associated with supporting, principles of diversity and inclusivity. And that seems to be now running right across the business. Now, I'm not saying it's an inherent part of every single person's job role in the industry. Of course it's not. But I think we are moving beyond, for those two particular topics that I'm mentioning, sustainability, let's say, and, diversity and inclusivity, I think we're moving beyond a moment where we've got individuals who are leading the charge within organisations that are responsible for, for flag bearing for those issues, to a place where everyone is starting to understand it much better and starting to incorporate it in their daily lives. And that was being reflected on stage at ATS. So people were talking about how do brands and advertisers make sure that their advertising investments and media investments are going to media properties that they want to support, because maybe those properties support minority communities or minority owned media properties, and maybe they are focused on environmental sustainability, maybe the brand cares about that. On the other side of that conversation was, are consumers pushing brands to care about those things even more? And then when we look at environmental sustainability, we had a fantastic challenge put to us by the opening keynote on day two from Jonathan Wise at Purpose Disruptors, which is, what is the moral principle underlining marketing and advertising when it comes to consumption and the impact that's having on the environment? And so our panel had to try to get to grips with that versus what are the practical steps that we're taking in the ad tech industry to reduce our impact on carbon emissions. And that was fascinating, right? Like a year ago, I don't think you could have had those conversations meaningfully. You may well have been able to ask those questions, and there may have been some people within agencies and within brands and maybe within publishers that were thinking about those things. But now we're actually getting experts on stage, and we're also getting super, if I think about my media responsibility panel, super experienced agency execs who live and breathe this stuff. They're like, yeah, our whole ethos. I mean, James Trott from Matterkind, he's like, our whole ethos is responsible advertising, responsible marketing and conscious marketing and purposeful marketing. So this is our wheelhouse and we do it every single day. And I think that's really interesting, because at some point might those things actually meet in the middle? Jonathan Wise mentioned, which has been covered widely in the media in the last couple of weeks, that Shell have gone back out to pitch for agency partners. Now, are some agencies in a position where they don't want to throw their hat in the ring for that? Well, I don't know. That's what the debate's been about in the press, yeah. Right? Will media agencies actually back away from this potentially large account? And I don't know the answer to that, but I think we're in a position where we can start debating those things more meaningfully, more honestly.
I totally agree. And Jonathan's point was, there are actually people within those agencies saying,
I don't want to.
I don't want to work those accounts
for a company that will pitch for this kind of business. And but on the flip side, he gave a reference about BP, you know, another obviously oil and gas magnate, if you like, that have almost. I hate to use a Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin term.
Oh God, where's
really,
this going?
Which really angered me when they said it. They've basically consciously uncoupled the skill sets they have within the business with the oil and gas business and said, well, actually, we realise that we are, you know, able but really adept at logistical planning and engineering. Let's use that for good and let's put more wind farms in the North Sea rather than try and drill for more oil and gas in the North Sea.
I mean, it was a great point, right?
Yeah.
Basically, his wider point was sophisticated. Well, I mean, all businesses, if they're doing their job well, but especially sophisticated global businesses with massive headcounts have got super talented people with an amazing amount of skills. You can actually direct those skills in a different place. They don't always have to be doing the same thing. And that's what his example of BP was, is that they had these, you know, this fantastic workforce who had been directed for many years towards fossil fuels. Well, why not direct them towards something else? New sustainable technology, supporting that industry, working out how that could be profitable. Yeah, I thought that was a really powerful point.
It was. And I think that what I was, I don't think I consider enough when I think about sustainability in advertising. I don't actually, I normally think about it from a perspective of the amount of data that we use and how wasteful data is and how wasteful all the different bids are and how wasteful it is to have loads of servers doing all of this. I don't think about the cause of advertising when it comes to consumption and the increase of unnecessary consumption of goods and services that we don't require in the developed world and actually our impact on that. And the BP example was, you don't have to use your amazing marketing skills to advertise, you know, another product that is not recyclable and kind of, and will just, you know, make you fat and make you unhealthy and make you ill, when you could be putting that to good use instead. And I think that was very interesting because I hadn't thought about it from that perspective. Now, Phil Smith, the Director General at ISBAR, on the panel you moderated, did kind of say, we disagree with the fact that you're saying that, you know, advertising is the root cause of all of this in terms of its lead to increased consumption, and advertising has good because it increases competition and it reduces pricing and it kind of creates innovation.
Provides profitable businesses,
exactly.
Which props up economies,
yeah.
And
so it's
employs
an interesting
people.
Debate that, you know, I think a lot of people in the room probably would have agreed more with ISBAR than they would have done with Purpose Disruptors. But that's kind of the point. We need to be having these conversations, right?
And I think that was, sorry, John, we'll give you a second to get in here in a minute. Also Phil's point is that there was much that they could agree on, which is that the advertising industry definitely has an impact on carbon emissions. But his wider point, like you've picked up there, Lindsay, is there has to be a way to have this conversation at a mature level where we accept that that the industry also does a lot of other really good stuff and drives a lot of behaviour that is excellent and is not the only, you know, not that it was an argument of don't look over here, we're not the only people that are having an impact on the planet. It was much more positive and front-footed, which was, you know, there's so many good things that we can be doing and we can be leading the charge on, and then we, you know, drilled down into a conversation about agreeing on some measurement principles so that we understand exactly what impact various sections of the industry are having on environmental sustainability, and you know, putting our minds to some practical, purposeful work to try to reduce some of that activity. You know, there's still a lot of different methods of calculating carbon emissions across the industry. I think everybody. One of the things that the panelists all agreed on is that, you know, we all want to contribute to this, you know, to this challenge in some meaningful way. And it's really important that we design some principles for ourselves as an industry that help us make some changes, do it quickly, and don't drag us down in trying to understand, you know, how is X or Y measured in that particular business? How does that compare with this business? Who's more at fault there? Who, you know, we rather need to be acting instead of getting tripped up in lots of detailed reporting, which I think was a really powerful point too.
I think it boils down to something that kind of was a theme throughout, was we need to just be doing things more mindfully and more consciously. And I think that gone are the days where you literally just turn up at the at work and you just crack on with whatever you're supposed to crack on with and actually think about, why am I doing this? Who is it for? Again, who is the human at the end of this ad? Do they need to see this? Is that useful? Am I doing this consciously? Is this sustainable? And there's so many different things that we can
we can tackle if we come into our roles in this industry with a more conscious approach.
Yeah, more mindfully.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, that bleeds into also the ATS event in itself this year. And one of the things that did strike me is that you tend to go to conferences and you come away armed with a million throwaway gifts labeled by the companies and the vendors who are handing out single-use plastic keyrings with a logo on it and stuff like that. And I think it's worth noting that this year there seemed to have been a change in that, because in the vendor area, the things being handed out were, like, I'm looking at my branded water bottle I was given by someone now, which I will reuse.
Very nice water bottle.
It's a lovely water bottle. And yeah, it seems that companies are starting to live that a little bit, live their own messaging, understand that people do not need to take away bags full of stickers and gift stuff and throw away things anymore. Like, it's industry taking practical steps, and that was interesting for me to see as well.
Absolutely. I think as event organizers, it's incumbent upon us to lead the charge on that as well. So for us, we had we took charge of building the stands this year rather than allowing sponsors to do it themselves, and that meant that we had one supplier. That supplier is they are tracked for their carbon emissions, so we know kind of every step of the way, kind of what they're using, how that works. Everything was either recyclable or sustainable or reusable. And that was really, really important to us. And also, it was really important to us to communicate that with our vendors as well, with our sponsors, and say, we are trying to approach this event in a much more sustainable fashion. Please don't bring loads of stuff with you. Please think, be more conscious about kind of what companies you use. We gave them links to companies of where they could buy sustainable products from. And all those kind of things will help. And event organizers are, you know, it's important for them to really be able to communicate that with people and say, please don't bring, as one person put it, a bag of landfill.
Mm. And it's true. I mean, it's all about taking responsibility for your actions, which I think is one of the themes that came out of that discussion. And the other point that I just wanted to make too, I thought it was really enlightening to hear. We had a chap named Scott Saleh, who is the sustainability lead at Publicist.
Dentsu.
Oh, yeah, Dentsu. I could actually even see his name on the slide and Dentsu written beneath it, but I thought I'd just say Publicist.
Fuck's sake.
I think we should keep that in because it's just amusing. it does really highlight just how broken we are as people after 2 days of ATS and months of planning.
There's a lot of agency people there.
Anyway,
Scott, I know that you work for Dentsu. Anyway.
She's just having a slow morning.
Yeah, I'm having a slow morning. But we talked about leadership. And all the panelists had something interesting to say about that. But what I found really interesting was Scott feeding back that at Dentsu they connect their their performance targets for their C-suite to environmental sustainability goals. And then we heard some anecdotal feedback from other attendees that in the audience that apparently there are some CPGs out there doing something similar for their CMOs, which is amazing, right? Because it is firstly demonstrating leadership, making it real, making it practical, and actually tying some responsibility to activity within the company. Because if those targets are set at a C-suite level, then it means actions will be filtering down to everybody that reports into them along the chain, which I just thought was great.
Exactly. It makes you accountable. And, you know, in Scott's case, it means it's not just Scott banging the sustainability drum the whole time. It's actually incumbent upon everybody in the company to think that way.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. If you could pick one personal highlight, let's say, from ATS London this year, what would yours be, Rachel?
I mean, I think you know my personal highlight. It's got nothing to do with ATS.
Go on.
I have to set the scene here a little bit. So just imagine 2 full days of AdTech Chat, lots of effort, lots of energy, lots of fantastic speakers, lots of reuniting old friends across the industry, lots of Kieran O'Kane shenanigans, and quite a bit of beer. And so it's end of day two. We've trundled off to the Westminster Arms, which it turns out is a lovely little pub right next to the venue.
It's very nice.
That served us well.
The unofficial after party.
The unofficial after party.
Thank you, Westminster Arms.
Absolutely. And shout out to Matt Prohaska for putting his car behind the bar yesterday for an hour or so. Anyway, there we are having some drinks. Kieran has been tasked with turning up at a client dinner later on that evening for his other business, First Party Capital. And a bit like a toddler, it was quite difficult for his poor colleague, Rich Ashton, to get him to frankly agree to do anything. And so cabs were arranged and off people went, and Kieran went nowhere and still had a full pint in his hand, hanging out with the Exchange Wire crew. through. Eventually, maybe an hour and a half later, he wandered off in a cab at the same time as some of his other FPC colleagues went off in a separate cab. Yeah, which is just nonsense.
To the same place at the same time.
Yeah. Environmental sustainability. I hope those cars were electric. Anyway. And then, as is classic Kieran O'Kane fashion, on one of the Exchange Wire Corp channels, or the one that he's got with me anyway, he's just sending me random messages about things that caused me to send him a one-line message back which said, "Kieran, are you drunk?" And the reply I got was one word, chicken.
Are you drunk? Chicken.
I mean, which basically...
That'll be a yes then.
Yeah, that was a shorthand for yes, a longhand for I've made it to Casa del Frango and I'm eating a lot of chicken. He just didn't have the capability to stitch the words together, and I got it. I understood. I was delirious myself at that stage. So I have to say, there were so many amazing moments, but that was one of my faves.
Yeah, I could imagine. You know, that is the ATS effect, and that is our beloved Kieran O'Kane. Lindsay, any particular highlight for you?
One of mine was when head of content, John Still... introduced our research lead, Matt Broughton, who you all know very well
as John,
worked with him for over a year, to the gaming camp panel, which, by the way, was an excellent panel.
That
really, really good chat.
Top-notch panel.
Great, great discussion. I really enjoyed that. Introduced Matt Broughton as Matt Broughton. And then came off stage and went, "That's not his name."
No. And then marched off without introducing the panelists as well.
He did.
Right. I can't defend myself. I was going to try. I tried.
We've all been there, John. We've all been there.
And poor Matt is sound guy today, so he's having to relive it.
But is it Matt Broughton or isn't Matt Broughton that's doing sound guy today?
I sat in the audience thinking, oh my God, have I been getting his name wrong the whole time? Is it actually Broughton?
Honestly, it was. I'd spent the time between the panels, knowing I was introducing them, making sure that my pronunciation was going to be fine for all of them. And of all the names to get wrong, it's Exchange Wire's research lead, who I work with most closely. And Matt, I could only issue an apology. I do know your name, but yeah, it was. Yeah, and then you say that threw me because I realised what I'd done, and then couldn't remember anything else. So I just shuffled
just
off stage as quickly as I could. In my wee jacket, as Kieran has decided to call it.
Wee jacket. As if anything you wear, John, at 6 foot whatever, is wee.
Wee jacket. But
I mean, on the names, we've all been there, John. I mean, everyone, the whole team knows about my many years of mispronunciation of names. And
there have been some excellent ones over the years from you.
Quite frankly, I think it's actually better to mispronounce the Exchange Wire team's names than it is other guests.
Yeah, I think, you know, if it was going to make a terrible mistake, it's good it's Matt, who I know and love.
You're still talking.
No, I think just... on that theme, one of my highlights was after my panel with Ed and Rainer from Stack It Up and Amber Williamson from Digital Willow, who gave a lovely case study about the Isle of Man.
Oh, yeah.
Was Rachel coming on stage and saying, I can't wait to go to the Isle of Wight.
Which then got repeated several other times throughout the day, and much to the dismay of a few people on a various WhatsApp group, who were like, "Oh, this is the Isle of Wight has been miscredited like four times today."
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect example.
Yeah. No, I think it's. All in all, it was a really wonderful event. We are incredibly grateful to our partners for the whole thing. It was really lovely to meet some people who they've become friends over email. For me, it was really nice to meet Giovanni Prosetti, fan of the podcast. Gio, I hope you're listening. And Olya Paramanova as well, who we have a great relationship with. So, yeah, great to make those connections in a really good event.
It was great. Were you going to throw something else in there, Lindsay?
I was going to give a shout out to something we haven't done at ATS before, which was address mental health in the industry. It was a big thing. And so we had Liz McConaghy, who is a former RAF Chinook crew member and still to this day the longest serving female RAF Chinook crew member, who... talk to us about her job and the challenges of mission creep, or I can't remember what the phrasing was, but basically you know it's the whole thing around your job might be 9 to 5, you come in early one day and maybe finish a bit later, and then you come in even earlier and then finish a bit later, and then your level of normal is becomes
quite different. In her context, it was actually having dead bodies by her feet. But in our context, it's probably kind of your new normal becomes working eight till eight and not even realizing it's a thing, and then working from home. And unfortunately for her, she had such bad PTSD and didn't realize it. She tried to commit suicide. But it was a really, really engaging and moving 25-minute chat from her. And it was the one time where one of our colleagues sitting at the back of the auditorium said it was the one time throughout the entire day where nobody was on their phones. Nobody was making notes. Everybody was just completely
glued.
Yeah, glued. Even the AV technicians who have been on their phone for the entire 2 day period were completely in awe of Liz talking. And it was really good to be, because mental health is so important in our industry. We've seen examples of people that have, you know, succumbed in many awful ways to mental health challenges. And it's a very demanding industry that we work in. And so for it to be addressed in that way by somebody who, you know, it seems strange to maybe tie in, you know, a war zone to a workplace and advertising, but actually the signs are the same. And it was really good to have everyone so engaged in that conversation, because it's such an important one that we don't address enough.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, shout out to our colleague, Anne-Marie Patricia Sheedy, who made the decision.
You full named her.
Yeah, she'll be cross about that. Who came across Liz somehow, and made a suggestion that we get her involved in something somewhere along the line. And we decided to get her on stage at ATS London. And I think, as Lindsay says, it was a great session, because it was atypical content. It's not the type of content that we often feature on stage at ATS. It was, you know, well, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on day two. It's not, you know, it's not the time of day that you typically, you know, might be thinking of being jolted out of your seat into another world and captivated by this personal story. And in a way, I think that just made it all the more important, because you suddenly felt like you'd had these 2 days of talking about advertising and marketing, and then you were reminded that there is, you know, there is something important at the, you know, at the heart of every single person's life, which is finding a way to balance the stuff that you do every single day and the stuff that you're paid to do with everything else in your life, and making sure that one doesn't overtake the other, and that if you don't, you know, the consequences can be grave if you don't keep your eye on that. And you know, her story was incredibly personal, and it was very heartwarming, and she delivered it with such passion and grace. It just left everybody in the room, I think, with a tear in their eye. It was really quite amazing. And it was just a nice reminder. We've been talking about humanizing advertising. I think it was also a nice reminder to all of us that, you know, we're not machines either. We plow our way through our working days. We wrap ourselves up in this world of advertising and marketing, but we're all individuals with different lives and different thresholds of what we can and can't cope with. And it's important to remember that.
Absolutely. And a big shout out as well to Andrea Bernhardt and and Joe Kidd from Britvic and M6, because they had to follow it.
Yep.
They had to follow it with a brilliant case study digital transformation at Britvic, but it was a tough act to follow.
It was, but they did it very, very professionally and very smoothly. And yeah, that was a great case study.
It was. I thought Andrea did that brilliantly, actually. It was good. You know, she called it out to start. She was like, that's the hardest thing I'm ever going to have to follow. And it was, because, you know, we had a room full of people who had been fairly emotionally impacted by what Liz had said. And I thought Andrea and Joe brought an excellent case study, and also some nice levity to it, which really, it was the right thing at the right time. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, totally agree.
Cool.
Can we go home now, John?
Yeah,
let's all go home.
Do you know what, though? Even the thought of getting home, it feels too much. I've made it this far. I now can't get back home again.
It's too difficult. Can we sort out? Let's phone Kieran and get him to get a cab for us.
Yeah. One cab each.
Yeah, one cab each. Electric, of course.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us. And again, thank you to all our partners who helped make ATS London possible this year. Thank you to anyone who took part in a Vox Pop in the vendor area. And we will be back with the normal MadTech podcast next week. Thank you very much for joining us.